From the halls of every school in Michigan, this is School Talks on 760 WJR with Dr. Robert Livernoy. Sponsored by Wakely Associates, Plant Moran Real Point, Collins and Plaha, O'Reilly Rancilio PC Attorneys at Law, Clark Construction, and by Must Construction Careers. Now, take your seats. Class is in session. Here's Robert.
Welcome to School Talks. Our focus on the program today will be the mental health of students and their well-being. We're joined by Dr. Andy Feuer, principal of Amberley Elementary in Portage Schools over on the west side. We'll chat with author Martha Burrich on how to raise happy and responsible children. And rounding out the program, we're going to look at the high school principalship from two different perspectives. One will be from Mike McKenzie, the current principal of Anchor Bay High School up in Macomb County. And two will be from Mr. Bill Putney, a former principal back in the late 80s and early 90s. Stay right there. This is School Talks on 760 WJR.
This is School Talks on WJR with Dr. Robert Livernoy.
Joining us now on the program from the west side of the state, principal of Amberley Elementary School in Portage Public Schools, Dr. Andy Feuer. Welcome to the program, Andy.
Great to be here and excited to have a good conversation.
Yeah, thanks so much. So in doing some research, I found out your school has done some work and has an interest in what is becoming a really popular book titled The Anxious Generation. And the book, as you know, it argues that this sharp rise in youth mental health issues like anxiety and depression and self-harm and suicide really corresponds to the widespread adoption and use of smartphones and the sort of the corresponding effects of social media. And what that has driven also is this increasingly overprotective population of what the author refers to as safetyist parenting. And anyone I know with children is dealing with this at the highest level in many cases. The book talks about some of the techniques to help rewire children. And so I'm fascinated to hear your interest in it and how it's playing out at your school. And I'm curious to start with, how has that book influenced your school's approach to student well-being and technology use?
All right, that's a great question. And to even start that question off, I am actually a father to a 10 and 12-year-old daughters, so it does have a personal connection as well. And from the school perspective, it opened my eyes to the understanding of, students are coming in with anxiety, they're coming in with depression, and it is triggered from, some is triggered from that use of social media or just what they're being exposed to, when they're on a smartphone. From the book itself, the data really has helped us understand that, once those smartphones were introduced to kids, that their self-image, self-esteem were impacted by that. So for us, we've been much more proactive in trying to address things when it comes to what students need, trying to make sure that we are acknowledging it and being respectful to the fact that, social media is part of our everyday life, and even students in elementary school are being exposed to it, and we need to do that good work to educate them and, more importantly, help build them up with some of the activities we do within the school setting.
Mm-hmm. So let me ask you, if you had to put a number on this, of all the students in your school, what percent of them do you think have a smartphone that they bring to school with them each day?
Obviously, being an elementary school, we are fortunate that students aren't using smartphones during the day, but I would say a majority have access to them. So as a building, we have a rule, no communication devices are allowed in the building, and most elementary schools follow that. But the reality is when they leave the school building, I would say a good portion of them, I'd guess up to 70 to 80% probably have some type of access, and that just wouldn't be an Amberley thing. That could probably be more globally speaking with students and smartphones. It's become, that thing that they have, they use as a communication device with family. They're able to get out and about and be able to connect. But it's also one where now they talk about in the book, those those guidelines that we give kids in the real world are much different when they get onto the virtual world.
So from the book, what specific strategies or programs at Amberlee are you using from the book to help students manage anxiety and really develop healthy digital habits?
Mm-hmm. Well, some of these things are not directly from the book, but they're following like the book research when it comes to students and how they deal with, or how they're dealing with anxiety and depression, those types of situations. We do morning meetings. We do check-ins with students. We have what's called zones of regulation, which is where kids are able to identify their feelings and kind of measure where they're at. And then from there, teachers are able to adjust to that. And maybe it's a one-on-one meeting. Maybe it's just that morning meeting where they're bringing people together and students are able to express themselves. So one thing that came out of the book they really talked about is kids need more face-to-face interactions. They need to feel connected beyond the digital world. So we also have a 31N counselor who meets with students, and that's a funded counselor that comes in at least once a week to meet with groups of kids and individuals. And that's been really helpful because a lot of what the research of the book is talking about is just how there's a much higher need now, and it's like, how can we get ahead of some of that? And when we see those indicators, how we can approach it in a more proactive mm-hmm. measure. And even within the classroom, we've talked about, not just helping kids, but also thinking, okay, what do they need? So we have created safe spaces in each classroom. So it's just a place for students to take a break. We have safe spaces in our office and throughout the building. Mm-hmm. Kids are looking for places where they can feel loved and cared for beyond just the home setting, because the reality is when you come to school it can be pretty challenging, especially if you're living in a virtual world outside of school where things might be much more you can manipulate how it is, and that's not always the case when you get into a school. So how can we flex a little bit as educators to meet those needs?
Sure. We're currently with Dr. Andy Feuer, principal of Amberlee Elementary over on the west side in Portage Public Schools. And, Andy, you mentioned the safe spaces and places for students to go in the school to have some support. And one of the things I learned about your school is you use what's known as a houses concept that really builds upon character traits for students. And when I think about all of the ways that social media can affect a child's character, how does that connect with your houses concept? Tell our School Talks listeners a bit about your houses concept and how you see it as a support mechanism for students.
Yeah, the houses concept has been a great one. We are in year two of full implementation. I want to give a shout out to Jeremy Zantz, who's principal at Haverhill Elementary down the road here. He was the one who initially brought this out. It's a K-5 experience. So within each classroom in the building, that includes specials. So it's about 28 classrooms. We have kids go into a classroom that we make groupings. They're kindergarten through fifth grade students in there. So you might have 25 kids in there and you have every grade represented. And we try to balance them out with all the different metrics when you make a class list. So when they go to that room, they're going to be learning. There's different character traits that students are learning each month. We have a monthly character trait. So there's a lesson that goes with it. The teacher works with the students. The neat thing about it is those students stay with that teacher their entire time at Amberlee. So whenever we have a houses lesson, whether you're in kindergarten and then once you move to fifth grade, you're still with that teacher and that group of students stays together. So it's almost like you're forming, and you talk about a house, it's like you have a family beyond just that classroom family that you might have or that grade level family. And it's provided a bunch of great opportunities, not just the learning, but also kids' opportunities to mentor one another, to get to meet another trusted adult, and to have the opportunity to maybe be a role model to some of the younger students within that room.
I'll tell you, one of the neat things about your program is when a teacher stays with a child for the duration of their career, it allows them, as you said, to stay in touch with them over time, even though they may not be their teacher. And when you think of that as sort of a spider web, you have a really strong interconnection of adults and kids, regardless of whether they're being taught by them or not, which really builds the whole house concept of helping kids feel supported. And I'm excited to see how that continues to unfold for you at the school. And with that, I want to thank you, Dr. Andy Feuer, for your time here on School Talks today. You got some really neat things happening there, and I think you're very smart to anticipate those challenges in social media, because it's certainly not going away. And I'm sure you, like me, are waiting to see whether the state rules on a statewide cell phone ban in schools. That would certainly change the dynamic for all educators. So on that note, thanks so much for joining us, and keep up the good work.
Thank you so much. I appreciate you having me on the show today.
After a word from our sponsors, we'll hear from Martha Burrich on how to raise happy, responsible children. Stay right there. We'll be back right after this.
This is School Talks on WJR with Dr. Robert Livernois, sponsored by Wakely Associates, Plant Moran, Real Point, Collins and Plaha, O'Reilly Rancilio PC Attorneys at Law, Clark Construction, and by Must Construction Careers. Once again at the head of the class, Dr. Livernois.
Joining us now in the program is Martha Burrich, a local author based right here in Richmond, Michigan. Welcome to the program, Martha.
Thanks. I'm really happy to be here, Robert.
So I, in doing some research, was intrigued by a book that you had recently written that simply says, yes, you can raise happy, responsible children. And in the world of self-help books for parents, some of the points you make in this book I found intriguing. And I'm curious, for our School Talks listeners, what would you identify as the core message that you hope parents take away from this book?
The core message, such an excellent question. You know what? Whatever's going on, it can be worked on. Just worry about today. You can work on these problems and you can solve them. But, you know, one problem at a time, and work on it today.
And, you know, I appreciate that. You know, as a kid, my dad used to say, every generation has its own set of problems. Mm-hmm. And sort of how you recognize the need to just sort of take it one day at a time, really, in my experience as an educator, helps a parent focus on what matters most, and that is parenting in the moment, so to speak. With that, you know, in the book, you emphasize the importance of mindset in parenting. And how do parents' beliefs influence their children's behavior and emotional well-being?
Oh, that's a really excellent question. And let me tell you, I want to give you a factoid, and that is that most child abuse happens during toilet training. Now, I know we're going a little bit earlier than your education experience here, but this directly relates to mindset. Parents are expecting behaviors that oftentimes children cannot fulfill. And, you know, I don't even recommend starting toilet training until 3, because unless you ask a child, do you have to go potty, and they say yes, and you say, can you hold it, if they say no, that they're not ready.
Sure.
Because their muscles aren't developed. But more child abuse happens over toilet training. People think children are being willful, and that goes with a lot of behaviors, Robert. People think children are being willful when, in fact, they're doing what they know will work. You know, what a lot of people don't realize is that whatever we give attention to increases. So if you give attention to bad behavior, what's going to happen? You're going to get lots more bad behavior. And a lot of people get confused. Parents will tell a child, stop. Well, rather than saying stop, you know, stop running. Rather than saying stop running, say walk.
Mm-hmm.
And don't yell from across the room, please. Get up. Look the child in the eye and say, hey, I need you to walk.
Mm-hmm.
But be nice about it.
Can you share a personal story or maybe a pivotal moment that shaped your approach to raising happy and responsible children?
Oh, most definitely. When my son was 4, oh, goodness, Robert, he was so spoiled and undisciplined. And you know what people don't understand? People who won't take no for an answer become adults who will not say no to themselves. That's where we get a lot of drug addiction and a lot of social problems, because people will not take no for an answer. And that comes from children who don't hear no enough. Parents don't back it up. So, you know, the parent says, no, you can't have that. And then the child cries, oh, okay, here, honey. Well, guess what? We're causing ourselves a lot of problems
mm-hmm.
today and tomorrow. So the number one thing that I learned was, you know, when I had to really learn to think, okay, if I say no to this, am I going to meet it? I cannot turn, you know, no matter if the child cries for 2 hours, I cannot go back on this. So
mm-hmm.
if I'm going to say no, I had better mean it and mm-hmm. stick to it. That was the number one thing I learned. And number two was look for the positive all the time. Because too often we recognize when the child's misbehaving, but they do 1,000 things right every day. We don't say anything about that. Oh, I like the way you talk to your friend. You're very friendly. Oh, that was so helpful. We forget to say those things.
Mm-hmm. You know, we're currently with Martha Burrich, a local author here of a really neat book. That is simply titled, Yes, You Can Raise Happy, Responsible Children. I do want to follow up on your point about whatever you say to your child, mean it. I cannot tell you how many times I've been in public, whether a restaurant or a grocery store or somewhere, and a parent says, I'm going to count to three, and they only get to two. And it's a one, two, and the child's still not, and then the parent tries something else because they don't want to follow through on three. And, you know, figuratively, they're at 2 1/4, 2 1/2, right? And the child, although they may be short, they certainly are not stupid, and they know exactly the game that's being played here. Let me ask you, in your book, you offer some simple strategies that parents can start using today to foster this kind of responsibility and happiness. What are one or two of them that you'd like to highlight?
All right, let's say you get in the car and the child won't put their seatbelt on. You just sit there until they put the seatbelt on. Or you're driving, the child takes the seatbelt off. You need to pull over and say, we can't drive until your seatbelt is on. Always have activities for the child to do, and please try to get them away from their devices. So always have activities for the child to do. Crayons, color, pencil, paper, toys, whatever, wherever you go, books. Keep the child occupied. So at the grocery store, you tell the child, look, I want you to walk by me. If you don't walk by me, I'm going to put you in the grocery cart. Now, don't scare the child. Don't say, oh, my God, somebody could come and get you if I can't see you. That's too scary for children. You just say, you know, I don't want to have to come looking for you. So if I can't see you and you can't see me, boom, you're going in the cart. Okay, so the child runs off. And, of course, the grocery store is candy land. It's fun for a child. Everything's right at their eye level. They will run off. So then you get the child. You say, I see you decided to sit in the cart. Put them in the cart. Have a smile on your face. Don't be mean about it. And then say, okay, where are the bananas? I need help. And keep that child occupied the whole time. Where's your favorite spaghetti? What's that person doing over there? Hold on to these apples, would you? Look, are there any worms in these apples? You know, just keep the child occupied.
You know, I appreciate those. They're very simple strategies. I wonder how they would play out for parents who have to handle a child with some challenging behaviors like autism or attention deficit disorder or any of those other challenges that children may pose to a parent. Is there an extension of those, or is it sort of just an enhancement of what you said?
Right. Well, you have to be careful because a lot of children that have disabilities and challenges also have some type of brain damage that affects these challenges. So most of this will work on a child no matter what. In fact, I had a woman read my book who cares for a man, an autistic man, who's about 40, and he's 6'5", weighs about 280 pounds. And this woman's 75 years old. She read my book and she said, you know, that book has really helped me to handle him much better. It has made my life with him so much easier and his behavior better, because we all need to be told what's going to happen. Here's what's going to happen at the grocery store, honey. You know, if you don't walk by me, go in the cart. Do you understand? Okay. Well, there we go. And here's what's going to happen in the car. We can't go unless your seatbelt's on, because it's against the law to drive without our seatbelt. Are you aware of that? Do you know that? Yes, exactly. That's what we do. So if you don't put your seatbelt on or take it off, we have to sit until you do.
Yes, Martha Burrich, author of the book titled Yes, You Can Raise Happy, Responsible Children. Above all, I really appreciate the practical strategies you've provided in this book. And thanks for writing it. And I look forward to your continued success in helping families. And most important, thanks for joining us on School Talks today. And keep up the good work.
Thanks, Robert.
Coming up after the break, we'll chat with two high school principals who did the job 30 years apart. This is 760 WJR.
School Talks on WJR with Dr. Robert Livernoy.
Joining us now on School Talks, we have two longtime educators in Macomb County and in the area. Joining us on the program is a high school principal from Anchor Bay, Mike McKenzie, and longtime educator, teacher, high school principal, superintendent, Bill Putney. Welcome to the program, gentlemen.
Thank you.
Thanks for having us.
So, you know, on School Talks, we spend a lot of time showcasing different programs, career tech programs. We have interviews with lots of wraparound services like our friends from the Detroit Zoo and the Detroit Institute of Arts. And we showcase teachers and whatnot. And I thought about the idea of bringing two high school principals on the show who served at entirely two different times. Mike is a current principal at Anchor Bay High School, and Bill was a principal in the late 80s and into the 90s. And I started to think about, you know, what are the top 10 issues that you face in school back then and even today? And it really intrigued me to get a perspective on a set of topics that were prevalent then and now and how different it is. And I'd like to start with, let's just start with substances, whether it's tobacco, vaping, or whatnot, and get a kind of a dual look at that issue happening in high school. So we'll start with you, Bill. Back in your time, what were the big substance issues in the school that you had to deal with sort of on a daily basis?
Well, tobacco was very, very prevalent, unfortunately, and kids didn't accept the risks that tobacco creates in their later lives. Alcohol was number one as far as weekends and home parties, and some sanctioned by parents, unfortunately. We also had pretty significant marijuana use, especially amongst juniors and seniors.
And Mike, fast forward to today, what would be your comparable perspective on that?
By far the biggest change is the vapes. And the difference when Bill was a principal is, you know, kids would be smoking, you could see the smoke coming out of the stall or you could smell it, and the vapes are, you can barely detect them, you can barely smell them. Kids could actually be doing it in class, the teacher could be doing their job and still not even realize the kids are doing it. It is an addiction, and the health effects of it are mind-boggling. There's a report that came out, I think, yesterday, talking about popcorn lung, which is a term mm-hmm. they use for what happens to your lungs when you vape, and that the consequences of it may not be repairable. We have kids that are addicted to it. The vapes, you have two types. You have nicotine, and then you have THC. And I think the other thing you see is the kids that, you know, Bill mentioned marijuana. The potency of the marijuana today in the vapes is much higher, and it is a huge addiction. It's mm-hmm. a huge thing we're dealing with.
Bill, you mentioned the whole idea of parents hosting parties, and I remember back at a time when I was a teacher, we made a pretty concerted effort to warn parents about the responsibility. Any experiences you had with parents that ended up for the parents being a pretty difficult situation?
Absolutely. We were blessed, I think, in one sense that we had incredibly good relationships with our local police department, as well as through the county at that time. Carl Marlinga was prosecutor. That's how long ago this is. And he was aware of this circumstance. We would host before commencement meetings with our graduating seniors' parents. One of the things we cautioned them with, and Carl actually came and spoke in our high school a few times, was to understand what consequences they could face. Didn't stop it, but I think it did reduce mm-hmm. it.
During the 90s, Bill, cell phone use was not prevalent with kids. It was more about pagers, wasn't it?
Absolutely.
Yeah, and in your experience as a principal, did you ever have students somehow requesting to come use the landline phone as a result of getting a page?
Yes, and we had to enforce isn't a fair word. We monitored that activity, especially if it was in the middle of a class. It would be, did you get a communication from a parent on an emergency basis? No. Well, then you're not going to be allowed to use the phone. It was one of those of pushing the envelope on behalf of the kids, but we put up a little bit of resistance to that.
I never had a pager. I had a paper out, but I didn't have a pager. So, Mike, are you able to talk a bit about the district's decision to manage cell phones differently?
At Anchor Bay, our board has presented the idea of banning cell phones in school throughout the day. And students will be able to keep the device on them, or they can put it in their locker, but they will not be able to have it out. They will not be able to use it during class mm-hmm. or during passing periods or lunch. And, of course, the students are panicking. Some parents have mixed feelings on it, understandably. But it's something that we're going to try since it's been in the media a little bit lately. And I think we've gotten some questions and some comments from other districts that are entertaining doing the same thing. And the idea is we need kids focused on learning. And one thing I think districts have to have, or schools have to have, you have to have one-to-one devices. You know, kids have to have laptops or Chromebooks, some sort of device to take the excuse away from educators saying, well, we need the device to do whatever activity. Mm-hmm. And that's something we're moving to as well. So we'll be one-to-one, takes the excuse away. I have mixed feelings. I'm excited about it. It's going to be a battle because it's hard to keep sure. the phones out of the kids' hands. But I think in the long run, it'll really pay off.
You know, you've provided us a great segue to talk about student mental health. I want to take a short break. When we come back, we'll pick it up on the mental health side and maybe even get into some student achievement. This is 760 WJR. We'll be back right after this.
Talks on WJR is sponsored by Wakely Associates, Plant Moran Real Point, Collins and Plaha, O'Reilly Rancilio PC Attorneys at Law, Clark Construction, and by Must Construction Careers. Now let's get back to class. Once again, your host, former Superintendent Dr. Robert Livernoy.
We're back here on School Talks. We're joined by Anchor Bay High School principal, Mr. Mike McKenzie, and longtime retired educator, Bill Putney. Before the break, gentlemen, we were talking about the effects of technology on cyberbullying and the amount of time children are preoccupied with phones and TikTok and whatever the soup of the day is. They're really addicted and obsessed with technology, like a lot of adults are. And from a dual perspective, I think about back in the late 80s, early 90s, Bill, what were some of the most common mental health challenges you faced? And then we'll compare that with Mike. So back in your time, what were some of the big issues kids faced?
I think student depression for kids who are underachievers, who come from strained socioeconomic backgrounds, has always been an issue. I know it was an issue, you know, when I was an administrator. And unfortunately, we had a counseling department, and this is not meant as a criticism in any way. When they had done their preparation to become school counselors, mental health was not a focus. Mm-hmm. It was academic achievement. It was helping kids prepare for college. And so when we had kids in crisis, a lot of times those crises ended up in the principal's office.
sure.
And it was a challenge, and it was a challenge that I was happy at the latter part of my career when I was in central office to see evolution in that becoming mm-hmm. a focus.
You know, you make a good point. Having started in the late 80s, you're only 4 or 5 years from the big national impact of the publication, The Nation at Risk,
absolutely.
Which drove everything to achievement and standards and assessment, you know, pairing it with going to college and so on. And it really pushed that pendulum out into that arena, really setting the table for people not to have much time to focus on that kind of stuff. So, Mike, in your case, given the size of your school and the population, what are some of the more common mental health challenges your students are facing?
I would agree with Bill. Still, I mean, depression, anxiety is huge. There's a tremendous pressure on the higher achieving students to succeed, to get into the Michigans or the Ivy Leagues. There's not the resources that we need. There's not people going into the field as much as there used to be. And a lot of it does fall on teachers. It falls on administrators. I agree with Bill too. Like our counselors go into counseling because they want to work with kids and counsel them. And then they get pulled into building schedules and
sure.
structuring the day and doing college applications. And we really could, every district, it's not an Anchor Bay thing, it's an everywhere thing, put more resources towards helping our students. The pandemic didn't help. It isolated a lot of kids. And I think some kids are still coming out of that, but it was an issue before the pandemic.
Mm-hmm.
And just talking to kids, if you just talk to them and you really hear what they're saying, the amount of pressure they face to succeed is it's alarming. And a lot of times parents aren't able to handle, or they don't know the situation, and it does fall on the schools. So it's a partnership with the parents, with the community, trying to provide as many services as possible to mm-hmm. help kids succeed.
You know, you mentioned the pandemic, and for all of my psychologist friends out in the School Talks listening audience, the nickel version is whatever happens to you from the time you're born until the time you're 5 or 6 years old, whatever life events happen, whether it's your parents get divorced or whatever it is, somehow that activity comes back with an extraordinary vengeance during adolescence. Mm-hmm. And I really and truly believe that the effects of the pandemic, we're only 5 years out, so a student starting kindergarten, they're about 5 years old. And I think in the next 5 to 7 years, you're going to see the effects of many kids who had to start school at their kitchen table. And all of the issues that they faced in a world that was shut down the way it was. So as far as that history, obviously, is yet to be written, but it's certainly going to be one to keep an eye on. So let's shift gears here for a minute. For our listening audience, we're with Mike McKenzie, the principal of Anchor Bay High School, and longtime retired educator Bill Putney, talking about what life was like as a high school principal back in the late 80s, early 90s, and what is currently on the plates of high school principals today. And in the lane of student achievement and curriculum and testing and so on, I'm really curious. Having been a teacher in the 90s, I have a decent sense of where the school's approach was to trying to improve things. And I'm just curious, from both of your perspectives, how they might be alike or different, you know, some 30 years apart. So, Bill, your time as principal, what were some of the big initiatives that the school undertook to try to improve student achievement?
We were sort of the beginning of the school improvement process, and we took it pretty seriously. Fortunately, I had colleagues in both Macomb and Oakland that also were in districts that wanted to really take this on. And so we built a network and started working across the county with what I would call districts that were really focused on student achievement. The hardest transition, though, as you would know, was with the staff of the high school.
Mm-hmm.
And one of my most embarrassing personal moments was taking student data one day at a staff meeting. And being rather vertically challenged, I pulled out a chair in the cafeteria where we had our staff meeting, climbed on the chair, and unfurled multiple pages of D's and E's that students had achieved at the end of a marking period, and basically challenged the staff, saying, "This is unacceptable." Fortunately, I didn't get knocked off the chair, but I did have a lot of visits to my office subsequent to that.
And for full disclosure, I was a teacher in Bill's school at the time, and I think you actually got up on the cafeteria table, if I remember correctly.
Probably true.
Because the paper was quite long, and I remember that well. Mike, you know, given how much politics has continued to influence achievement and education and that, what's on your plate right now as far as school improvement goes?
Well, I think there was a time where student achievement was focused on college-bound students. It was, you know, we have to get these kids to college, we have to 4-year college, and I think there's been an emphasis on focusing on careers and career pathways, not just a 4-year college. 4-year college is great for some kids, but for a lot of kids, there's other avenues that are really great pathways for them. And I think a lot of districts, a lot of schools are now focusing on meeting the needs of all the kids, and we see that. We've added some career pathways to our school. We've added some CTE programs, some career technical education programs. The one that kind of blows my mind is we are opening a welding lab next year, and we had 220 students sign up mm-hmm. to take the welding. And so meeting the needs of all of our students, not just the college-bound ones, I think is really important. And maybe a shift, it's a bit of a shift in stigma too, because back in the 70s and 80s, there might have been a stereotype or a stigmatism for kids who are going in vocational, and that shift is moving, and getting kids to understand what is out there. Colleges cost in-state tuition for a public university is probably $28,000 to $32,000 for room, board, and tuition. That's a lot of money per year to be spending if you're not sure what you want to do. And giving kids an opportunity to figure it out in high school, at least hopefully figure it out in high school, and what pathway they might want to take, I think is a really important shift that districts around the state are doing.
I think that was the great educational myth of that Mike just pointed out of the 80s and 90s, which was that all kids needed to go to college to be able to be an earner and have a lifestyle that was going to be comfortable for them. And now we find that many kids exit from college with a four-year liberal arts degree. I think the average earning most recently was like $38,000 for those individuals. And yet kids who come out of a trades program are earning six figures. So if that was the justification for forcing all kids to go to school, we missed it by a mile.
And you know, you really shine a light on the effect that I mentioned, the Nation at Risk, which really pushed the pendulum toward academics and college. Really helps explain how the sort of the geopolitical landscape affects where schools go. And you know, in the 80s, we're right at the brink of the collapse of the Soviet Union and the effects of the Cold War and just all those external forces that shape what people think schools should be doing. And I must say, the one thing the state of Michigan right now does very well is they provide funding for the most in-demand career tech programs to incentivize schools to offer them and try to fill those jobs. And it is a fascinating, when you look at it from a 30-year sort of top-down glance, it really is the effect of what the larger politic is as to what the value is. Because, I mean, in the 70s, there were still kids graduating high school going right into the auto plants making a great living. Then the economy collapses, you know, the oil crisis, and the rest is history. And then the swing, as I mentioned. So it really is an interesting dynamic to how schools pursue what they think is right for kids. So on that note, I want to thank you, Mike McKenzie and Bill Putney, for joining us on School Talks, giving us a really neat look at how the high school principalship has stayed the same, but in many cases is very different. Appreciate the time and keep up the good work.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Thank you.
Special thanks to our guests on the program today, Dr. Andy Feuer, Martha Burrich, Bill Putney, and Mike McKenzie, for a really meaningful conversation about the challenges children face in this technology-driven world. That's all the time we have for now, but remember, there are two ways to spell one and three ways to spell two. Till next time, this is School Talks on 760 WJR.